I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. The death of a well-known Kansas City bicyclist has renewed an activist push, calling for safer roadways for bike riders and pedestrians. There's more than one approach to the problem. They all come at a cost. Today, what a Vision Zero proposal could mean for Kansas City. The plan aims to eliminate all traffic-related deaths by 2030. But how will a vision that failed in five other cities across the country be tailored for success in ours? Then, just because you're out of town doesn't mean you should miss the excitement of a hometown crowd when the Chiefs play. We'll learn about a couple of faraway places where you can catch this weekend's game with fellow Chiefs fans. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. It's called Vision Zero, and it's a proposal now before the Kansas City Council. It's aimed at reducing traffic deaths to zero during the next decade. That means no fatalities involving drivers, bicyclists, or even pedestrians. The logic behind Vision Zero is simple, and that's that any traffic death or serious injury is a tragedy that could be prevented through smarter engineering, education, and enforcement. But there's a rub here, and it's this. Other cities that have adopted Vision Zero are, in some cases, actually seeing fatalities rise or remain basically flat. I'm talking about Chicago, Los Angeles, and Washington. There's also the matter of money. Implementing Vision Zero could be expensive. Here now to talk about Vision Zero and its place in Kansas City are Councilman Eric Bunch. He represents the 4th District and is known for his advocacy of a bike-friendly city. He's behind Vision Zero. Councilman, nice to have you back. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Also with us, Ashley Hands, Vice Chair of the Kansas City Regional Transportation Alliance. She joins us this morning via Skype from New Orleans. Ashley, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Councilman, last year, at least 14 cyclists and pedestrians were killed in collisions in Kansas City. Could these deaths have been avoided?
Yeah, and without looking at the particular details of each and every one of them, I can tell you just the handful that I looked into could have been prevented through better enforcement, but more importantly, better design of the street. Fundamentally, what's at play here is that speed is dangerous. The speed of moving vehicles, the faster you go, the more likely it is that the person who's hit is to be killed or seriously injured. At 40 miles an hour, almost every pedestrian who's hit at a 40 mile by a vehicle moving 40 miles an hour is killed. And so what we can do to reduce speeds through traffic calming and things like that, we can certainly reduce those deaths to zero if we really focus in on that.
You know, Councilman, as a guy who rides his bike to work many days when the temperature's a little warm, I can tell you cars go really fast in this town.
Yeah, and I would say that's by design. We really, over the past half a century or more, have really focused on making it easier for people to drive quickly. And I understand that the benefit, at one point we saw that as a huge benefit to our community, but all we're doing is we're shuttling people out of the city more quickly, out of my district and out of the city limits, and really at the peril of the people who live right here in these neighborhoods.
So Ashley Hand, what is Vision Zero? Can you define it for people who are listening?
Vision Zero is a multi-pronged approach to addressing roadway safety for all users. So it recognizes that there are a lot of different people using our public right-of-way, our streets, to move to and fro. And so it's a combination of public policy, a commitment to putting the right rules in place to support safety first, as well as roadway design, speed reduction and enforcement, and education overall. As Eric mentioned, it's really about a culture change. We're moving away from a purely car-centric approach to thinking about our city streets, to recognizing that better mobility and access for all roadway users is going to improve our economic, health, and community outcomes at large.
And Ashley, the guiding philosophy here is that every accident, in fact, could be avoided, right?
Yes, I think, and it's really important when we talk about what's happening in roadway violence, it's crashes, accidents. I think in general, we're trying to get away from that term because it eliminates the sense of responsibility. But absolutely, when we think about most of these crashes coming from speed and really recognizing that there's an 80% chance of survival if someone's hit by a car that's driving at 20 miles per hour versus a 10% chance of survival when that car is driving at 40 miles per hour, there is a significant difference there. So if we can think differently about, you know, what the priorities are in that public realm, we can really start to shift the outcomes for many members of our community.
Councilman Bunch, part of the strategy here, there's lots of different ways to tackle this, but some of the ways are as simple as installing speed bumps or increasing law enforcement presence to keep eyes on problematic intersections, right?
Yeah, I'm reluctant to jump straight into enforcement because, as we know, traffic enforcement in particular is fraught with the potential for profiling folks who their only means of getting to work is through a car that may not be licensed, which is problematic, but also it really... Enforcement comes with some danger, of course,
but speed bumps might be something we're talking about here.
I mean, simple traffic calming measures that are inexpensive to do. Speed bumps, speed humps, whatever we want to call them. Curb extensions that we're seeing in more places like in downtown, things that really sort of make us think differently when we're driving and through design, bring speeds down. And back to a couple of things, actually. One example of where we've actually seen speeds reduced through simple redesigning is Armor Boulevard in Midtown Kansas City. I know that one's been a bit of a lightning rod because it was new and there's still some design challenges to it. But speeds went from about 40 miles an hour to under 30 miles an hour, 27, 26 miles an hour.
And how did that happen? Explain what the design was that helped that happen.
So it used to be a 4-lane street and it was incredibly wide. It had parking on both sides, but it was so wide that people felt as though it's not dangerous to drive quickly. And, you know, we're automatically sort of programmed to drive quickly when we have an excess amount of space because we see it on the freeway. When you have the design of a freeway that's placed in an urban environment, people tend to drive like it's a freeway. And so what happened there was you went down to two lanes, one lane in each direction as opposed to two. And then the average speed became the speed of the prudent driver and not the fastest driver.
Is that a big expensive fix or is that a relatively simple thing to do?
It's something that was just essentially paint a new pavement. That's something that can be done through resurfacing, which is something that we need to be doing anyway to keep up with our potholes. As a city, we need to do a better job of incorporating these types of interventions as the opportunity arises with resurfacing and reconstruction of our streets.
We're already getting some phone calls here as we talk about bike and pedestrian safety in Kansas City, reducing the number of fatalities for bikers and drivers and pedestrians to zero. Let's go to some calls now. And Howard from Kansas City, Missouri. Howard, you're on the show.
Hi, great topic. I've been in the Midtown Kansas, Missouri area since 1980s, and I have to tell you, I've never seen a city where people just wander around in the middle of the street, stand in the mediums in the middle where the turn lanes is, just wander out, they'll stop cars in the middle and talk to each other. I've almost hit a half a dozen people, and it's always been because of pedestrian malfeasance, never because of my speed, because even 20 miles an hour will kill someone. So they need to give out tickets for jaywalking like they do in New York City and other places because our pedestrians are completely irresponsible. Huh. I agree with what somebody's saying on the car, changing some of those lanes and things, but really everything I've seen so far is bad pedestrian behavior.
Right, Howard, I appreciate that. And Ashley, respond to that. Does he have a point?
You know, I think it's really easy to kind of point fingers. We can do the same thing with drivers. And we have to recognize that the number of distractions that are occurring with kind of the proliferation of technology and other things that are happening in our society have changed the norms. And so I would agree that education on all fronts is really important. There's great examples of this being done. Bike Walk KC has a great program, for example, where they're teaching students how to ride bikes responsibly and things like that. So there, it goes across the board. And frankly, as someone who lives downtown raising three children, I'm horrified by the behavior of drivers on a regular basis as we go to and from school and our regular activities. There's, you know, blatant disregard for red lights and other kind of very simple driving rules that I think is quite alarming. So I think education across the board is really important. And that's part of cultivating this culture change around all road users have a kind of an equal rights to a safe and free access to the right of way.
You know, Ashley, I understand there's also a component connected to Vision Zero, this new way of approaching this issue that brings together stakeholders to understand how every accident happens. They bring people together, and I'm talking about, you know, engineers and traffic planners and policymakers. That really hasn't been the norm to date, but Vision Zero would change that. Do I have that right?
Absolutely. So I think one of the key tenets of Vision Zero is really taking a data-driven approach. And the work that I was doing in Los Angeles was during the time that they launched their Vision Zero effort. And just by looking at where crashes were occurring, what communities were most impacted, it was quite evident that the majority of crashes were affecting our most vulnerable communities. And I think that's quite alarming. And so when you start to really get into the data, which can be kind of a level-setting tool for all stakeholders, both on the elected and in the engineering and the broader community side, that's really important. But when you think about one of every four unintentional injury deaths among children ages 13 and younger is caused by automobile crashes, that's quite alarming. And I think these are things that we can control these outcomes. We can shape our behaviors and our streets to work better for everybody, to ensure that we are not killing across the United States the equivalent of a 737 dropping out of the sky every day.
Councilman Bunch, does Kansas City have a bigger problem with fatalities involving bike riders and pedestrians than other cities?
Yeah, and I also wanted to clarify that this is beyond just bicyclists and pedestrians. It's all road users, so okay. Passengers,
drivers,
vehicles,
too.
Drivers.
Yeah.
But yeah, in looking at fatalities per capita, we rank well above most of our peer cities and some of our larger cities who really started to invest in Vision Zero policy. So you know, we talk a lot about our abhorrent, violent crime rate, our homicide rate, which is we rank near the top every single year, and that is absolutely unacceptable. But what's equally unacceptable is that we rank just as high in, among our peer cities in traffic fatalities.
Yeah. Let's go back to some calls here in Gabriel from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Hi, how are you doing?
Well, thank you. Thanks for calling.
I was just wondering, the guest said that it was profiling if law enforcement targets vehicles that were unlicensed or a danger on the road. I was curious on how that would be profiling if they're putting other people's lives in danger by being on the road in the first place.
Yeah. Councilman?
Yeah, I didn't really mean it that way. So to sort of backtrack on that a little bit, what I think I was trying to get at there is that making a system where you have to drive to get everywhere puts a really big financial burden on folks. And sometimes, unfortunately, and this is a bad thing, that sometimes we end up seeing a lot of people who are unlicensed and uninsured, which presents a whole other host of problems when that person might be involved in a crash. Mm-hmm. And so that is problematic. The profiling part is simply that I think the Casey Star did an article a little while back about the history of profiling in Kansas City, Missouri, with traffic citations. So two separate issues, but equally important to consider.
Back to some calls here. Chris from 43rd and the State Line neighborhood. Chris, good morning.
Good morning. I'm an avid bicyclist. I ride all over Midtown, from downtown all the way out to Brookside, east of Troost, all the way to Roe Boulevard. It's a challenge, but it's not that bad. I just pay attention. I keep heads up. I watch the cars. I don't signal a whole lot. I don't necessarily use bike lanes. I enjoy riding, and I do it for exercise and just to explore the city. But if you're an urban bicyclist, you just have to give heads up. I've crossed where the young man was killed on Southwest Trafficway. I've crossed at the same crossing dozens of times, and I pay attention. And I guess the final comment would be, bike lanes are created, but that doesn't necessarily mean bicyclists will come on Southwest Trafficway or Southwest Boulevard, KCK over to KCMO. There was a bike lane created 5 or 7 years ago. I ride it on a regular basis. I've maybe seen 5 bicyclists in 5 years. Hmm. So I'm out there biking a lot.
Right.
And I seldom see other bikers.
Chris, thanks for the call. Councilman?
Yeah, on the issue of the caller bicycling a lot, I bicycle a fair amount. I rode my bike down here today, actually. And
you're wearing a suit.
Yeah, I'm wearing a suit. Yeah. And it's possible. However, the average person doesn't feel comfortable on our streets. And the reason why we don't see more, why Chris isn't seeing more people on bikes is because we don't have a connected network of safe streets to ride on.
Yeah.
There's very little in the city where I would allow my 6-year-old son to ride a bike, whether he's 6 or 15, the streets are not in a state that I think people are comfortable. But the other issue with where Pablo Sanders was killed crossing Southwest Trafficway, I cross the street there fairly often as well. It's in my neighborhood. I try to get to the park over in Roanoke, and the light does not turn for bicyclists unless a driver comes up behind them. And mm-hmm. when he was there late at night, traffic is lower. So on Valentine, unlikely for a driver to pull up behind him to trigger the signal. So bicyclists are going to run lights when the system is not, and that's an easy fix.
Mm-hmm.
Just make it so that the light automatically turns green every now and then. And as a result of not doing that, we've lost a life. So simple fixes like that don't cost us anything can save lives.
We're talking about the Vision Zero plan, a plan to eliminate all fatalities on Kansas City streets. You know, Ashley, the City Lab news outlet took a look at the impact that Vision Zero has had on 5 cities that have tried it. The results weren't that impressive. I mean, City Lab found that none of the 5 cities, and again, I'm talking about Chicago, LA, Washington, D.C., San Francisco, and New York City, were on track. None of the cities were on track to reach 0 traffic fatalities for decades to come, much less by their 10-year targets, even though millions of dollars have been spent to do some of the things that you guys are talking about. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that, you know, points to some of the challenges and the complexity of addressing system-level change in our city. So when we think about Vision Zero, we can't just approach it with one tool in the toolkit. It really requires a multi-prong approach. And in the cities that have made a committed effort to work towards Vision Zero, even when they haven't quite hit the target, they're still working towards that. And we have seen success. Oslo, for example, made the commitment and has successfully attained Vision Zero. And so I think there are examples that are positive. I do think it requires a data-driven, multi-pronged approach that brings a diverse set of solutions to the table. And we have to recognize that the cost of doing nothing is so much greater. There was a volunteer advocate in the city of Seattle, for example, that estimated that the cost of property damage, injury, and loss of human life was over $222 million in terms of the kind of loss of life that we're seeing on our roadways. So it is a huge impact to our community, never mind the just kind of the challenge of putting
right.
cost to a human life.
So Ashley, when you talk about a multi-pronged approach, I know there's also a stalled bike master plan that's out there. There's something called the Complete Streets Plan that's also out there. I get a little confused in all these different plans, but mm-hmm. is that what you're talking about?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's recognizing to the comment that the caller made earlier that just putting a bike lane doesn't necessarily mean that people will come there. Thinking about a network approach, how can you ensure that we're kind of going where there's the greatest issues first, so the data can help us identify the most dangerous intersections and high injury network, but then also recognizing that if you have an incomplete network, you're not really solving the problem. So I think, you know, the benefits of adopting an approach like the bike plan proposes is that you start to connect those gaps, making it easier to get across town or get to your destination by allowing all road user the right level of connected infrastructure. And that's
right.
really important.
Let's go back to some phone calls here. Carolyn from the Midtown area. Carolyn, you're on Up to Date.
Yeah, thank you. I hope this relates to everything, but I was wondering if there's any plans with what you're talking about to address just texting while driving. I've traveled to other cities and you never, you know, see as many people driving and texting just because the police enforcement is so high.
Right.
And I don't know that in Kansas City, and I'm wondering if there's any thoughts on that or plans for that.
Well, Councilman Bunch, no one in Kansas City texts and drives, right?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
an issue that's been in our rearview mirror for years. What is Carolyn talking about?
Yeah, I actually saw someone the other day. I was sitting at the bus stop at Armour in Maine, and I saw someone talking on one phone and texting with the other.
There you go.
Just wild. So there are a few challenges there. I mean, distracted driving is absolutely a huge problem in our communities, and probably partly to blame for the continued rising and the increase in traffic fatalities and serious injuries. We unfortunately as a city are limited in what we can do at the ordinance level because we are preempted by state statute from banning texting while driving. However, Columbia, Missouri actually passed an ordinance not too long ago that just more broadly defines distracted driving.
Mm-hmm.
And distracted driving really is that the crux of it. And so I think a great follow-up to Vision Zero is going to be looking at those opportunities, just in the same way we're working with gun laws here and trying to do meaningful change in the light of a state that doesn't always respect home rule.
Andrew from Kansas City, Missouri, you're on Up to Date.
Hey, Steve. I think a big issue I see is enforcement. Everybody seems scared to enforce speed limits, scared to enforce, distracted driving because it's politically unpalatable. But in other countries, I mean, where they enforce it, people just don't speed. Here, I'm on every street, people are speeding all the time, and it's a hazard to everybody.
Interesting comment, and actually hard to disagree with him.
Yes, exactly. I mean, and I look at kind of the difference when I was here in Kansas City the first time and then moved away and came back, just looking at some of our north-south corridors as an example and looking at kind of the differences in speeds. We have bigger cars that can do much more damage, and we're driving them a lot faster on our urban roadways. But as we see changing neighborhoods, as Kansas City is densifying and filling in through great development projects, our neighborhoods, we have to think about, are we going to create a space where kids can walk to school, parents can, feel comfortable with them doing that, and, really recognize that our most vulnerable road users are seniors, often our poorest neighborhoods, and our youth are most adversely affected by these conditions. It's alarming.
Councilman Bunch, I need to wrap up here. So give us a sense. You've introduced Vision Zero at the city council. Is there a hearing scheduled? I know you had a hearing yesterday. Yeah. Where are we going here?
Yeah. Yesterday, we heard public testimony at the Transportation Infrastructure and Operations Committee of the City Council.
A lot of support for this idea?
We had overwhelming support from the public on it. And then it's going to be referred to a joint committee of transportation and then finance and public safety because of that public safety component, because this does really involve some level of law enforcement. And there's also maybe a discussion about how do we use this as when we develop the action plan that this calls for, how do we use that high injury network that Ashley referred to help us prioritize our capital improvement dollars. So mm-hmm. we're not necessarily asking for more money. We're just saying, here's another way that we should be thinking about prioritizing our scarce resources.
If we're going to repave this street, let's think about going from four lanes to three or to two, is what you're saying.
Yeah, or if we've got an $800 million GO bond that voters approved in 2017, let's look at the priorities in that plan and make sure that Vision Zero is one of them. Like, safety should be paramount when making investments in the built environment.
Well, come back and see us when more progress is being made. I want to stay on top of this. Lots of interest from our listeners about Vision Zero in Kansas City. That was the voice of Councilman Eric Bunch. He represents the 4th District on the City Council. Ashley Hand joined us via Skype from New Orleans this morning. She's vice chair of the Kansas City Regional Transportation Alliance. Thank you both very much. Sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Now, when we come back, Chiefs homes away from home. And I'm not talking about Pat Mahomes. Where do you go and watch games when you're not in Kansas City? Turns out there are lots of places around the country. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. You can sign up for my newsletter and never miss a beat here in the Metro. Go to kcur.org/Kraske and subscribe to Kraske Off Mic. You'll get updates on the shows you've missed and a weekly column from yours truly. Sign up now. Just go to kcur.org/Kraske. Well, not every fan of the Chiefs lives here in Kansas City. They're spread out all over the country, and in many cities, there's a tavern or two that becomes Chiefs headquarters for the game. In Philadelphia, for instance, it's Big Charlie Saloon. In Chicago, it's Toon's Bar and Grill. Now we're going to take you around the country to a couple of these homes away from home for the Chiefs to give you a sense of the far-flung appeal of the team and to find out why these bars are so strongly connected to our team from Kansas City. If you're thinking to yourself that someone somewhere has made a list of these places, you'd be right. UpToDate found the Chiefs bar page at their Arrowhead Addict website. It lists joints from New York to Hawaii, and it's where we found several of today's guests. Well, I'm going to begin here by going out to San Diego. It's one of the longest-running Chiefs homes we found. It's the Kansas City Barbecue Restaurant, where we're joined by co-owner Martin Blair. Martin, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. And before we get into this, I've got to ask you, Martin, is the barbecue at Kansas City Barbecue in San Diego, California, anywhere close as being as good as Kansas City Barbecue?
Well, it's hard to, we do our best out here to make it as authentic as possible. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. So how many Chiefs fans, Chiefs games can fans watch at Kansas City Barbecue in San Diego?
Oh, every Chiefs game all the time. They start out here, of course, 2 hours earlier, so we have a pretty good crowd out by 10 o'clock in the morning.
By 10 o'clock they're showing up. Wow. Because the time difference there is, right?
Right. So they start most of the home games at 10 o'clock, but we'll get them an hour too early this weekend, just, you know, first come, first serve.
Do you have a special room where folks go to watch the Chiefs games out there?
We have a back room that's pretty much a sports den for the Chiefs that holds 35 or 40 people. That's always packed, but last couple weekends, the entire restaurant was packed with different televisions watching the game.
Wow. Don't Californians find it at least a little unusual that an establishment on Harbor Drive in San Diego, California, features not the Chargers or the Rams, but the Kansas City Chiefs?
Well, not anymore, especially since the Chargers left us. That used to be, you know, kind of one of our best red Saturdays when the Chiefs came out to visit San Diego. Of course, we lost that about 3 years ago.
Yeah. Well, you have deep ties to the area, Martin. What are they?
Well, I was born in Kansas City, and my wife, Cindy, is from Wyandotte County, and I lived briefly in Prairie Village. And my parents moved out to California when I was young, but both my wife and I graduated from the University of Kansas, and we moved back out to San Diego and started the restaurant about 37 years ago.
Was opening the restaurant the original plan when you guys moved to San Diego?
No, not at all. Cindy's an architect, and I was in real estate development, and we just kind of opened it as a hobby in 1983.
And it sort of took over?
It did, and 2 years later, they filmed a couple scenes from the movie Top Gun, and
that helps.
That helped. That helped a lot. Plus, in the last 37 years, the city has grown up around us to a large extent.
Yeah. So, how did you guys even know how to run a restaurant if you weren't educated in that world?
Well, we learned a lot. A lot of us in these over the years.
Yeah. What originally drew you to San Diego in 1980?
My parents had moved here, so I grew up here in San Diego from the time I was about seven on. And when I got a job offer, moved back from Topeka, Kansas, where we were, and to come back to San Diego, it was a decision that we both wanted to do.
So how rabid are the fans who show up at your place on a weekend to watch the Chiefs?
Well, they are rabid, and we've got a nice assortment of local fans, but also we're very close to the convention center and the hotels, and so we get a lot of out-of-state Chiefs fans or Kansas City people visiting out here in San Diego.
And your establishment is well-known as the place to go to watch Chiefs games in San Diego.
Absolutely, even with the title.
I've got to ask, how has Patrick Mahomes changed the math for you?
Well, for the last 2 years have been extremely exciting, of course, and the interest has picked up. And not just from, I mean, there's a lot of additional fans out here that are now Chiefs converts because of Mahomes and the excitement around the team and cheering them on. So it's not just the Kansas Cityans out here.
Yeah. How many fans are you going to have on Sunday when the Chiefs play for the AFC Championship?
Well, I mean, as many as we can hold, as far as we know. We're bringing in another television to put outside. Of course, it's forecast to be 70 degrees here on Sunday, so that should be nice. We do have a Boulevard beer on tap. We're the largest sellers of Tank 7 in California.
Well, 70 degrees on Sunday sounds pretty nice, Martin.
So,
how do you see their chances to go to the Super Bowl?
Well, we're looking forward to the next two games, I'll put it that way. So,
yeah.
I just hope we don't try to spot Tennessee 24 points. You could kind of hear a pin drop in our place after that first quarter.
I bet. Did anybody leave?
No. Nobody left.
Because a few Chiefs fans in the stadium left that day.
Yeah.
Well, that's Martin Blair. Again, he owns Kansas City Barbecue Restaurant out in San Diego. Martin, I sure appreciate you taking some time with us today.
Oh, thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. Look forward to Sunday.
Okay, let's move back to the Midwest here and go to Chicago. Joining us now is Danny Beck. He's the owner of Toon's Bar and Grill. Danny, good to have you.
Hey, Steve. Good morning. Here from chilly Chicago.
I was going to say, you too have deep ties to this area. Tell us about that.
I grew up in Coffeyville, Kansas.
Wow.
And then from there, I moved up to Lawrence. I'm another Jayhawk, just like the guy there before me. And went to KU, started working at Johnny's Tavern, was my first gig there.
No kidding.
And all my best friends at KU were actually Chicago guys. And after college there, ended up in Chicago to go to culinary school. And Toon's was the bar that I started working at. And a few buddies of mine, we needed a place to watch a Chiefs game, so we started watching Chiefs there about 25 years ago.
I was going to say, you were going to Toon's even before you bought the place. You just were drawn. What drew you to it?
A shuffleboard table.
Why not, right?
Table, and I just, as a kid from Kansas, and my hometown, the two bars had shuffleboard tables, and I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, here in Chicago, you don't see a whole lot of shuffleboard tables, and this place had one, and that was it. And I begged the guy to give me a job, and we started watching the Chiefs in the back room there, and everybody else was watching Bears games.
I was going to say, if I understand right, when you first went out there and showed up at Toon's, it was a Bears bar. So you would go hide in the back room?
Yeah, we're banished to the back room. We had our own little TV back there and about six of us, and we'd watch Chiefs games while they watched Bears games.
And it wasn't until you took it over then, Danny, that it became a Chiefs bar?
Well, we slowly, it was just a kind of a progression after I left and traveled around and opened a few restaurants, did House of Blues Chicago and a few other places. When I moved back to Chicago, I had the opportunity to buy the place in 1999, and we started back up watching Chiefs games, and it just word of mouth, more people would show up, and hey, where do you watch the game? Everybody's, friend's brother would come to town, and he'd want to watch the game, and it just kind of organically grew into, we took the whole bar over eventually.
Describe Toon's for us. What kind of place is it?
It's a neighborhood tavern. It's actually the building was built in 1914, and it's been an existing tavern for over 70 years. So it's been a lot of history there. There's a back room with a pool table and a shuffleboard, and then the front room. It's just a neighborhood place that has been Toon's for 30 years, and the gentleman before us ran it for almost 40 years. So we know for sure. Since 1945, it's been a tavern.
Wow. Well, like the Kansas City Barbecue Restaurant out in San Diego, you offer some homey touches there at Toon's, and one of them is Boulevard beer. How popular is it up there? I think we lost Danny Beck from Tunes Bar and Barbecue. We'll get him back on the phone here in just a moment. Our phone number here, if you want to join our conversation and tell us about places you've been to around the country that are big Chiefs bars and places to go on the weekend to watch a Chiefs game, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. We're visiting with Danny Beck. He's the owner of Tunes Bar and Grill in Chicago. It's a big Chiefs restaurant up there. You have some homie touches up there, Danny, and one of them is Boulevard Beer. Tell us about it. How popular is it?
Oh, yeah, we're one of the biggest definitely one of the, we sell more Boulevard Wheat and Tank 7 here in Chicago than anybody else. We also J. Rieger Whiskey are friends of ours. So we do whiskey shots on special every Sunday. We do a Mahomes Mule with J. Rieger Vodka. And so we get them in here, that's for sure.
So what's turnout like for a regular season game for the Chiefs? How many people will crowd in there?
We'll get 100 plus easily, and then we've hit capacity the last few weeks, so we'll cap it off at about 145, 150 people.
No kidding.
And then we'll once we do that, we ship them over to our new bar, and we'll have another 150 people in there as well. So we'll have at least 300 strong in our two places this weekend.
How has quarterback Pat Mahomes changed things for you? How many more people has he brought out given his popularity and his MVP award last year?
I mean, even people that are not Chiefs fans just love, he's so exciting. I mean, I have people that are just like, come up to me and they're like, man, I just love watching the Chiefs. You know, even they have other teams and stuff, but he's just such an exciting player and brought so much energy to the team.
I was going to say, does the occasional Chicago Bear fan ever wander in and watch?
Oh, yeah. We'll still have the game on in the corner somewhere. They don't get any volume, but we'll have the game on somewhere for those guys, but they know. You know, there's plenty of places to watch the Bears in Chicago, but we're the home for the Chiefs.
I can't help but wonder, how confident are you that the Chiefs are going to win on Sunday against Tennessee?
Oh, we're all calling this our revenge tour. We already took down Houston. We're going to take down Tennessee, and let's get that matchup with Aaron Rodgers in 2 weeks.
And be reminiscent of the first Super Bowl 50 years or 50 plus years ago, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that'd be great.
How many people are you going to have in there if the team goes to Super Bowl?
We wish we could.
All right, that's Danny Beck. He's owner of Tunes Bar and Grill up in Chicago. We thank him for his time. Again, lots of places to watch Chiefs games around the country. And you're never without a home, I think, if you're traveling. Coming up, Brian and Spencer and some fun things to do this weekend.
It was a Friday night, I woke alone to get the feeling right. We started making out and she took off my pants, but then I turned on the TV, and that's about the time she walked away from me. Nobody likes you when you're 23, and I saw more of these my TV shows. What the hell is ADD? My friends say I should act my age. What's my age again? What's my age again?
Let's talk about some fun stuff to do this weekend. KCUR contributor Brian McTavish is here. He follows and writes about pop culture. With him, Spencer Hardwick, founder and curator of Wire KC Weekender. They join us here in the studio each week to talk about fun stuff to do in the days ahead. Gents, how are you?
We are great.
Go
yes.
Chiefs.
I just spoke for you, sorry.
Absolutely. Go Chiefs. It's very cold. We're ready for that.
And you're wearing
Chiefs.
A coat. It's so cold. You're here in the studio wearing a coat.
I'm mentally preparing
for
Sunday.
Your wool hat's on the tabletop. Amazing.
Absolutely. We're ready to roll.
Spencer, let's get going here about Adulting 101.
Yes.
We talked about adulting on the show this week.
Yes. So for a lot of folks who are not millennials, adulting is a bit of a new term. So I went to UrbanDictionary.com, a very helpful resource for breaking down different pop culture terms. Adulting is the act of carrying out one of the duties and responsibilities expected of fully developed individuals: paying off credit card debt, settling confrontations without social media, things of that sort.
Kids didn't learn how to become an adult, I guess, when they were still at home.
You know, those millennials, that this song, What's My Age Again, is pretty indicative of this. So yeah. The AIGAKC is giving Adulting 101 classes. This is an organization that's put together an adulting dream team. Local accountants, lawyers, HR Amazing. Professionals, all are on hand to answer all of your questions. It's $10 for non-members, free for AIGA members. And one thing I like to say about why some millennials are having a bit of an adjustment transitioning, you guys took out home ec, you took out cursive writing in our school curriculum.
So when we grow up and truth to that.
We're asking some of these questions, that's why.
And this is going to be from 11 to 2 on Saturday, beginning Saturday morning at AIGA 1801 McGee, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, only you would know that there's a song out there about going to the Super Bowl. Oh, wise one.
I'll take it. I'll run with it. I'll run all the way to the end zone and score on behalf of all Kansas City Chiefs fans. We're going to the Super Bowl.
It's a big game.
AFC Championship game. Who doesn't know that? But I'm going to tell you, KC Chiefs, our KC Chiefs versus the lowly and sadly ill-equipped Tennessee Titans. Oh, 205. 205. Be there Sunday, Arrowhead Stadium. And I'm looking at a fellow that's going to be there right now. Spencer, you're taking it in, right?
That's correct. Again, I'm all bundled up. This is what I'm going to wear to the game. I'll put on a few red accents, but for the most part,
you're going.
And
you're wearing a coat inside a 70 degree studio, and you're going out to that cold game.
It's all about mental preparation. You know, the team's mentally preparing. They got to walk through today. I want to walk through what I'm wearing at Arrowhead Stadium.
If you haven't, now you've got your ticket. But if you haven't bought your ticket to the big game yet, you're smart.
Because
well, are you? I don't know. The thing is, they're very inflated right now, but they'll go down. You know, try to buy one about 130 tomorrow. Yep. But right now, the lowest ticket I can find was like about 250 a pop.
Wow.
Not bad, really, considering that a ticket to the Super Bowl in Miami will run you a minimum of 5 G's. Oh,
is
don't
that,
forget.
Is that right?
Well, yeah, more like 10 grand if you really want a good seat. But it's so corporate now, the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Don't forget the $60 to park in the official stadium lot this Sunday. So for $300, give or take, you can get in there. Now, here's the deal. There will be fans who go who do not go. What do I mean? They will pay their parking and tailgate like there's no tomorrow, which there won't be for the Chiefs if they lose, and they won't lose, so don't worry about it. But they'll just set up, you know, maybe clean up the barbecue and wait for the others to come back. That's cool. I've actually done that once before where you hear the stadium cheers and you're sitting there munching on a hot dog or what have you. Will the Chiefs win?
Yes.
The Chiefs have an array of star playmakers, as we all know, headlined by Mr. Patrick Mahomes.
They're going to win.
Yeah.
They're
going to win.
Elvis Gerbach isn't under center?
Okay. Stop that.
Oh, that's just
stop
mean.
That.
That's just mean. Now, if running back Derrick Henry for the Titans doesn't run all over us, we're going to win. If he runs all over us, guess what? We're going to win.
I think that's right.
Either way.
You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday.
This is quite a transition from the Chiefs to something very, very different.
Steve, our goal is to make something for everybody. So this is for the creatives. There's been a lot of talk in the last few months about where do creatives go in Kansas City to congregate, reflect, and generate some of their best ideas. And this particular organization called Creative Mornings KC is quickly becoming a fixture in the city for the creative community. Hmm. They brand themselves as a free monthly breakfast lecture series for the Kansas City creative community. This month, they're going to have Georgina Herrera, who started Georgina Jewelry in 2010. Her fashion jewelry has been seen in runways from Miami to Paris to New York, you know, checking all the big boxes. And these take place at Plexpod. So I will say that there is a wait list for tomorrow's already.
Wow.
These are in high demand. But for the creatives who are listening right now, check out Creative Mornings KC on Facebook or Google. They have something every month for that community. They're usually at 8:30 on Friday mornings.
Interesting to hear about that. Okay.
I blow through here, and the music goes down and around, and it comes out here. I push the first valve down, the music goes down and around, and it comes episode, yeah.
Let's talk about the music going round and round, Brian.
I just got to say, I miss Danny Kaye. I'm sure you do too, Spencer.
Danny
Kaye. Danny Kaye.
Remember Danny Kaye?
I know Danny DeVito. Danny,
there you go.
That's all I got.
Very different person, actually. Yeah. Okay, so the music will go round and round and round and come out you know where when the UMKC Midwest Honor Band and Orchestra Festival gets underway. It's actually all weekend, people coming in from out of town, you know, musical types. But the public can take in the region's top high school and middle school musicians from 10 in the morning to 2:15 Sunday. Sunday, Chiefs Day, right? Performing Arts Center at UMKC. Here's the deal. There will be six separate concerts. The sixth and final concert starts at 1:45 at the UMKC Performing Arts Center.
It'll be over.
No.
Or almost over.
No. But I was speaking with an organizer of the festival who said, hey, stick around. It might be over by 2:15, 2:30, 2:45 at the latest. And as far as the conflict goes, an organizer of the fest told me yesterday, well, we did book the date first. Which...
also, the first quarter doesn't seem to matter for the Chiefs lately. So.
Anyway, so if you love the youth music, I play trombone. Spencer, you were telling me you played what?
I played the iPod in middle school.
How about you, buddy? What'd you play?
The what?
The iPod.
You mean the iPod?
He's younger. He's younger than us.
Yeah, plays music. You know.
Oh, you play very versatile.
What instrument did you
trumpet.
Play?
Trumpet. Yes, big trumpet player.
Anyway, go have fun with the kids Sunday music time.
I gotta testify. Come up in the spot looking extra fly. For the day I die, I'ma touch the sky. Gotta testify. Come up in the spot looking extra fly. For the day I die, I'ma touch the sky. When they thought pink polos are hurt the rock before Cam got
Kanye's going to touch the sky, and what are we going to do this weekend here?
Absolutely. I know this is not the first time I've used the Kanye West drop. You know, I still love him despite his latest shenanigans. I thought this song was very apt, though, for an art exhibit this weekend called Together Under the Sky. It's a solo exhibit of recent works by a local artist named Kwanzaa Humphrey, who's generated quite a bit of buzz lately. Kwanzaa says, I quote, "I draw, paint, and make the invisible visible." And so very well-renowned and has a very small art gallery that will be on West 39th Street. I think this is tomorrow, 6 p.m. Friday on 1802 West 39th Street. I also thought it was a good idea to hear who are you all's favorite artists, period, or your favorite pieces. What speaks to you guys?
I'll go there. Comic book king Jack Kirby. And, you know, a guy like, who was the early 60s pop artist? Pollock? No, it wasn't Pollock. Who was the guy? Lichtenstein.
Yeah.
He basically, okay. I'll say it, ripped off all the comic book artists. And got lots of money for the paintings, which just blew up panels. Jack Kirby, who else?
I like Calvin and Hobbes. We're talking about comics. Woo. But more broadly, I really was enthralled with the 30 Americans exhibit a little while back. So I think this kind of fits nicely into that as well.
Very cool. Very cool. So this is coming up at the Smalter Gallery, 1802 West 39th.
That's correct.
And finally today... Brian, what do we got?
In lightning swift fashion, I will now remind us all that last year, 2019, was the 50th anniversary of Monty Python's Flying Circus.
Wow.
So, just not quite in time for the 50th anniversary, we have What Is Your Quest? A Python Party. It's a super, super, super silly party celebrating the 50th and 51st anniversary of the legendary British comedy troupe Monty Python. You need to be there. Dress up as your favorite Monty Python sketch character. 7:30 Saturday. Davies Uptown Ramblers Club. Prizes will be awarded for the silliest of silly walks.
Those were the mellifluous tones of Spencer Hardwick and Brian McTavish. Gents, thanks so much.
Go Chiefs.
Good list for this weekend. Go Chiefs, absolutely. You can find previous episodes of Up to Date at kcur.org/up to date. Check out my conversation earlier this week about the historic relationship between black communities and fast food franchises. Just go to kcur.org/up to date. Tomorrow, the indie film critics discuss the best independent films and documentaries out on the big screen now. On the list, Adam Sandler's Uncut Gems. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Chelsea Engstrom. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.